Hello and welcome to the podcast Building Confidence. My name is Sue Reed and I am your host. Every week I will be discussing the subject of confidence with a new guest. So with no further ado, let's jump in. My guest today is a guy my husband and I started chatting to in a pub along with his partner, Katie, a little while back. And I was so interested in what he was telling me, I wanted to have him on my podcast. So I invited him. So Matt Baird is the founder of Baird & Co. Recruitment and the Social Housing Roundtable. Matt has worked in the recruitment industry for the last decade, providing resources for councils, housing associations, charities, and for domestic abuse services. He supports them with a range of needs, including supporting staff, providing strategic insight, and helping with restructure. He's also a board member for Spring Housing Association in Birmingham, UK. He's chair of the Supported Exempt Forum in the Midlands, and he also hosts a weekly discussion platform to bring people together with the aim of sharing best practice and making real change. So welcome to the show, Matt. It's lovely to have you here.
Yeah, lovely to see you again, Sue. Thank you very much for inviting me.
That's okay. I mean, I'll explain why I was so interested in a minute. But the first question I always ask my guests on the show is, what would you say your definition of confidence is?
I think confidence, it takes many forms. I think it is very core. It's self-belief. I think people often mistake it for, you know, somebody being brilliant at something. It's not always that to me. It's self-belief and it's willing to kind of take that risk. There's also backing yourself. And I think in the world that we're in now, that's becoming more and more difficult to do. But it's kind of knowing that you're confident, I guess, knowing that you're, you know, sure of what you're talking about and that you are someone who, you know, believes themselves to, yeah, to be, it's difficult to describe confidence without using the word confidence.
I mean, that's why I always ask, because there are so many different versions. But I think, yeah, you're right in what you say. It's not about necessarily being good at one skill, although it takes confidence, you know, to do that. But it takes an inner belief in yourself that either you can do the skill or you can learn how to do it. Yes. And yeah, you may not get it right, but you'll keep going until you do. I think that's the confidence that you don't just give up.
100%. And it's that, it's almost confidence in knowing that you will succeed, but also that success is different to everybody. So, and I think it's not necessarily being the best in the world at it or even the best in your business at it. It's just knowing I can succeed at this level and I'm confident I can get there. It's like the whole thing about raising a family, isn't it? It takes a village. You can't just do it purely by yourself. And it's that network around you that can help build your confidence. But that's a whole nother, and not a whole nother avenue.
Yeah, mothers, you're just handed this baby and like, go on then, get on with it. But we manage.
I had a kid and they had their twins just before lockdown. And obviously you're nervous enough as it is, but the one thing missing at the beginning is that confidence. You need other people around you. So when they didn't, they had to find their own confidence to go, actually, we can do this, but it takes time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But that probably was a good exercise to help people believe or realize that they can do it themselves. You don't always need somebody.
I'll leave it.
So, yeah. So the reason why, when we were talking in the pub, I think we were eating fish and chips, waiting for the singer to come on and enjoying a drink. And we started chatting. And what I was really interested in is how you were telling me that you worked for a recruitment company and you'd been doing it for a while. And that was in the sphere of recruiting for social housing. And you weren't completely happy with the way it was running, being managed, like the support behind it for the people that are actually in the social housing position, if you like. So perhaps you could tell me what your thoughts were and why you decided, right, I'm just going to set up my own company.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've worked for a few firms. There was one that I was with for a number of years that gave me some incredible training and really taught me the basics of recruitment to the point where it's now so ingrained that, you know, it almost seems as if it's very, very simple. And actually, I think that's where a lot of businesses go wrong, is they think recruitment is easy. But I needed a new challenge, moved on to a couple of other firms. And the problems I found when I moved, particularly to some of the other firms, were that I wanted to do more than just recruit. You know, the sectors I was recruiting in, particularly the social housing and the charity space, I've got a network of however many thousands and thousands of people on LinkedIn. And when you can bring people together, real change can be made. And when you can kind of go, actually, let's do more than that. But the problem, and I completely understand it from a business perspective, but when you work for an agency who are obviously paying you, is that, well, it's fine you're doing that, but what's our return on investment? And my argument was always that we're building brand that is more than just about being a recruiter. We're A, showing that we're industry specialists, but B, we're showing we care about a sector that doesn't get enough care, support, and love as it is. And actually what we found over 2022 is that the sector is coming under increased media scrutiny because a lot of it has fallen down. And a lot of that has been because business and business people have got to the top of some housing providers on huge salaries. You know, some of the salaries in social housing, bear in mind, a lot of them are not-for-profits. We're talking in excess of 200,000 a year.
Wow.
You know, huge amounts of money. And yet the sector is meant to be about supporting the most vulnerable. So I kind of thought, well, actually, the bits I'm enjoying about the job, I enjoy recruiting, I'm good at recruiting, I know what I'm doing in that space. But I also enjoy speaking to people and saying, right, well, you're struggling with that. Why don't you speak to them and let's have a conversation? And that's where the Social Housing Roundtable came from, which is now every Tuesday, 11 till 12. It's completely free. We did 48 of them last year, which was kind of mental. I realized it a couple of weeks ago, but every single discussion was different. Every discussion, some were more business focused because in the day they are still businesses, but some were far more about how do we support those who are the most vulnerable when we don't have the funds to do it? What other things can we do? And we talked about domestic violence and homelessness and everything in between. And I get so much joy out of doing it. I do get questioned by partner and friends going, right, well, how are you going to make money out of it? I was like, well, I'm not. There are people who come to those who now trust me, who can see the network that I've got, who can understand my passion for the sector, and so now recruit with me. And that's how it gets paid for it. People come along and they choose to use me as their recruiter. And the money from that is what funds the roundtables. But there's a huge amount of joy that comes from them. And the feedback has been brilliant. And I'm just hoping this year we can do even more with it.
Yeah, no, it sounds brilliant. I mean, the fact you've had 48 meetings, you know, over the year just shows how much that actually was.
Our quietest had 7 people in it, I think, but our busiest had 58.
Wow.
And that was on, there was discussion that was held, which is whether or not social housing needs a mandatory qualification in the same way that you do if you're going to work in the NHS or in healthcare or teaching or any other sector where you care for people. You have to have a qualification, but in housing you don't, or don't yet anyway.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, it was really, really engaging debate because we don't want to stop people going into housing because it's a sector people don't know about. So could qualifications restrict that? But on the other side, without them, it isn't seen as a professional industry in the same way as those other ones I've just mentioned. How do we get that balance right? But yeah, they're a networking forum. That's what they're there for people to do. But they're also there for people to have a safe space to talk about real problems that they're having and saying, look, how do we solve this? Because we're having this at the moment and we're struggling. And I think like any industry, and you'll know this having worked in a few industries yourself, I certainly know, being vulnerable is confidence.
Yeah,
there's a confidence in being able to say, I don't know, or we are struggling, because it's willing to go, actually, there's stuff I'm brilliant at, this we're not at yet, who can help? Because if you don't ask for help, you're never going to improve. And that is confidence in itself.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, what you're actually doing, and I think where you're differing to a lot of businesses in all industries, is that, like you say, it's not all about the money. And that doesn't mean you won't make any money, but you're doing it in a different way. And you're doing it in Simon Sinek's Start With Why way. I don't know if you've read that book. I mean, it's brilliant, brilliant book. But he says that people, and Jeffrey Perlman of Zumba fame as well, who is now a brand consultant, he also says that people follow a belief more than it's like Apple, Nike, Disney. It's not the product you're offering. Because if you look at Apple, I mean, their new phones are always breaking down. There's always something wrong with them. But people will queue all night to get one because of what they stand for, that challenging the status quo, being different. Nike's weekend warrior. It's people that have a belief, that care about something that's going on in the world. And that strikes me as something you're doing. And that really could be very big.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. And And it is just me. I mean, I am very fortunate. When I set up on my own, this came down to confidence. I knew I was good at the recruitment piece. I knew I was good at networking. I know I can walk into a room and speak to anyone and be happy doing it. What I'm not particularly great at was writing a terms of business or doing credit control and things on those lines. I'm rubbish at asking for money or asking to be paid for something, which is really, really bad when you're trying to be entrepreneurial, is asking for money, you know, asking to be paid for services. But there's this amazing business called District 4, and that's my email address, and you'll see it on my branding. And they are a community of recruiters, community of independent solo recruiters who are all in different industries, we're all in different areas, but who didn't want to be completely on their own. So District 4 say, right, well, we'll take a small percentage of your fee, of each fee you put through. And for that, we'll give you a CRM, we'll get you set up, we'll give you a business coach. And you know, as well as anybody, coaches are unbelievable. I mean, my coach is a lady called Claire Mohammed, and she's absolutely fantastic. The business wouldn't be, and the round table wouldn't be where it was without her. It's set up by James Johnson, who's been an amazing founder of this and believer in this concept of going, we can just bring people together who, I'll be honest, have mindsets like mine, who want to do well in recruitment, but who have a very, very kind of social purpose behind what they're doing. Let's grow this community. They can share ideas and best practice. We can do group training sessions if we need to. It's about knowing you're never on your own, whilst knowing you've got a big back office support system as well. And it's screamed out to me as the best way to go. And it's been brilliant. And started in February 2021, so nearly completed 2 years. And the freedom they've allowed me to have, because there is no pressure, there's no targets, there's nothing like that. But there is this, obviously, well, look, you get out what you put in. And the more we can put in, the more we can do with the community. And we've just brought some new people on and we're growing, and it's a lovely time to be a part of it. But there's no pressure from them, because I was confident that they could do what they said they were going to do, and they were confident that I could do what I said I was going to do. So the partnership worked. And I think that's what I've really enjoyed. It isn't easy. Like I say, I'm rubbish at asking for money, and I won't put up my fees, and I won't do other stuff. People going, well, you're doing all this, why don't you charge more? I'm like, I just don't feel comfortable doing it. I think if I worked in other industries, I might do. But working in social housing, where I know every penny that I charge is tenants' money.
It's taking away from their budget, isn't it?
100%. But equally, I know that I'm going to find them staff. They're going to struggle to find themselves. And those people bring a lot more value to the business. And I also know that what I'm doing is so much more than just finding them staff, because I'm really pushing their brand. And it matters to me. It really matters to me, every client I work with. So the partnership works, and what I charge is fair, and everyone's happy with it. But it's an interesting time, and I think housing is in for a real culture shock this year because it's got more news coverage than ever before. We had obviously the young boy who died of damp and mould not long before Christmas over at Rochdale. We had things with LNQ where the MP body this year, we've had people like Quajo coming through and talking about, really highlighting through ITN and other platforms about the problems with particularly the larger housing providers. And that's where I think people's social purpose is struggling with those who work in the industry. And it's a real problem, because a bit like the NHS, you work in it because you love it, not because it pays the best. And when some businesses are becoming so money focused from the top down, so
yeah, definitely
don't feel that way, but top, it's all about money, money, money. People are leaving those businesses in droves because they don't like the fact they're not close to their tenants and they're not supporting tenants in the way they want to anymore. Or the people being introduced into those businesses are very sales focused or very money focused or very business focused. And it's changing the dynamic of some housing providers. And I'm hoping we see a big shift over the next couple of years back to what it used to be, but we'll wait and see. I think
we have to see. We might need a change of government for that. Not wanting to be political or anything, but we might just need a change of government.
We might just need a change of government for that to happen, unfortunately, yes.
So as far as the actual people, you know, at the other end, you know, the receiving end, for want of a better expression, and what would you say the benefit to them is in structuring it in this way?
From the housing side, or from people like me?
From the actual side of the people living in the housing, You know, the council tenants, social housing, etc.
What happens when people, businesses don't have social purpose? I did some amazing work last year with Bromsgrove District Housing Trust, who've introduced a new role into their business called the community coach. Because you get your housing officers, they will go out, they will speak to tenants, they'll find out if there are any problems, they'll see what they need, they'll support them. They will, you know, they'll deal with the income, they'll deal with antisocial behaviour, they'll make sure rent's being paid, they'll do all that stuff. And they're brilliant, brilliant people. There was a role missing, and I think Bromsgrove District Housing Trust have started to really kind of push on this, which is this community coach role. And their role is just to be out in a region that, because often you have, and they call it a patch in social housing, but you know, they'll have an area, a few streets or a borough or whatever it might be where they provide social housing. And the community coach will take over a few of the streets and will just be present at all times. They'll be walking the streets, there'll be a bit of door knocking, they'll be putting up flyers saying there's community events going on, they'll be doing whatever. But they'll approach people in the street and say, look, I'm working for us. What is it you're missing? Because so much that's gone wrong, when you have businesses which go, right, you know, there's housing officers out there now who have patches of more than 1,500 properties. Like, how on earth are you meant to keep on top of that? It'd be like a landlord, one person having 1,500 properties to deal with. But that's what some of the large organisations have done. And what's missing then, or what happened, is presumption. And presumption has been the biggest issue in housing for the last few years. Unfortunately, presumption, and also a lot of stuff to do with diversity and inclusion. And unfortunately, there's been some systemic racism in housing and other things. Mm. And our new president of the CIH, the Chartered Institute of Housing, Lara Oyedele, has come in, and her big thing is anti-racism in the boardroom. She's doing an amazing campaign on that, and people should definitely check that out. Her confidence is amazing, but she pushes through when continually people have maybe said no. She's like, no, this needs to happen. And she's got confidence in herself to do that. She's brilliant. Mm. But what Bromsgrove did was they brought in this community coach to stop that presumption, because there were businesses who are going, I know what we're going to do. People want their repairs. We're struggling to get the repairs done. Let's make it 24/7. Let's open at the weekends. That'd be brilliant. And then they did that without speaking to the tenants. And then tenants going, I don't want you in here at the weekend. I don't want that. I want you, if you're open 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, I just want you to have the staff to come out and fix my broken X, Y, Z. And things like this have happened all the time. It's people hear what's going on in the private sector. Oh, this is what people want. We'll do it. Mm. And they haven't spoken to the tenants. And there was a white paper that came out at the end of 2020 that made people really kind of go, look, you have to get your tenants more involved in what's going on. Some people have done brilliant with that. Other people haven't. Some people haven't known where to start. And some people have taken the risk. And those that have been confident enough to take that risk have done some amazing, amazing work. And, you know, Bromsgrove did another thing where they did a proper gender salary review of their business and realised that people who worked in development, which is a heavily male area dominated of the business, were getting far more than housing officers or people who worked out in communities, which happened to be more female in terms of staffing numbers. And then, well, why? It's the same job. They're both officer level. It's because the market had said that development costs more than the housing side. And they went, no, we're not doing it. So they blended everything back to a central point, and one salary went up and one went down. And yes, it means they might struggle to recruit in one area a bit more, but they know they're doing things right.
Yeah.
And there's some amazing work. Bournville Village Trust are superb. Others, I mean, the ones I know best are obviously more local to me, but Saffron Housing, which is over in Norfolk, did some amazing work a couple of years ago to really get tenants back embedded into their process. But you need someone who's going to be confident enough to lead on it and want for a better term, put their head on the chopping block a bit and go, actually, this needs to happen. I'm going to lead on this. And if you're not with me, then please leave. And you need it from that top down, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because people in kind of your officer levels and your manager levels, and even your senior managers, some people have been shouting about this for years, and it's not changed until, I guess, those people get promoted up and go, right, we're gonna change the wheel, as it were. And I've met these people through the roundtables. I've recruited for these people through the roundtables, and they're brilliant businesses, and they're companies that really, really care, but they are so limited sometimes in what they can achieve.
Yeah.
And the demands made of them are crazy sometimes, but that's the working world these days, it seems.
It is, yeah, but it is something we've got to push back against, I think. And I think, you know, when ordinary working people get together, we can make things change. But because people think, oh, there's nothing I can do about that, then they don't do anything about it. But when ordinary people get together, and I think this year we're going to start seeing more of that because we've got this winter of strikes everywhere. And it's people saying, and again, I can't help but get political because it's such a subject. But
right now we really are.
Yeah. But you've got, you know, people like Mick Lynch that people are now thinking, he'll stand up to anybody. He'll say what he thinks. You cannot get the better of him. He knows what he's talking about because he really, really believes in what he's doing. And I think these people are coming forward and they are going to make a big difference.
But he's also taken the time to really, really understand his specialism. He has read, he has researched, he has made sure he's got his facts right. So therefore, when you do try and fight against him, he's confident he'll win before he walks into the room because he knows his facts.
Yeah,
I think it's where people in recruitment have got it wrong. I think it's where a lot of people in sales and other industries have got it wrong because they're going, I know this. And then someone comes to them with fact or with direction or whatever it'll be and go, you're wrong because of X, Y, Z. And that's when people just start throwing mud. And
Yeah, I can't possibly be wrong. I'm the CEO of this company.
That's not right. You go, well, you know, and I think you're starting to see the solidarity with strikers from across the sectors at the moment, that's really showing that people obviously don't want their training being messed up. People don't want people in the NHS walking out or anything like that. No. They're going, well, this just isn't fair anymore, particularly when you're seeing some of where some of the funds and things are going. So, but it's taking the confidence of people. You know, I mean, it takes a confidence to strike. It takes confidence to stand out there on a picket line and go, this isn't good enough. It takes confidence to go on TV and say, this isn't working anymore. No, I was at a conference last year and I wasn't on the panel or anything like that. I was just in the kind of listening congregation, as it were. And somebody said that what social housing needs is we need to get more people into the sector, which I completely agreed with. We need to get better at apprenticeships, completely agreed. And we need to stop people in the media constantly moaning about the sector and saying what's wrong with it and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, no, we don't. I was like, because you need people to be held to account.
Yeah.
So we need more positive stories. We do need some of the amazing work that comes out, but good news doesn't sell. We know that. You watch any news now and 90%.
I don't watch the news at all now. It's too depressing.
You put it on for 5 minutes, you're like, nope, done, calm.
Yeah.
And it's awful. But those are the things that people watch. And so good news doesn't go as far. But you still need people to hold people to account and you still need those news stories to come out because otherwise people just do what they want. And when you had, unfortunately, the lady at Peabody who was left in her home for 2 years before anybody found her.
Yeah.
They were a landlord. Like, to this day, I can't work out how that happened. I don't understand how that was missed for 2 years, but it was, and that's what happened. Mm. And if people aren't continually bringing these stories up and going, look, this happened, they're working on improving it, they have to change, nothing ever will. So it's an interesting one. Obviously takes, I really liked it when we met in the pub that time and you're talking about confidence being the theme of your podcast. I really liked that idea because it does take so many facets and it does cover so many things. And a lot of time it is also having the gumption to stand up for what you believe in, but knowing that what you're standing up for is correct is the wrong word, but evidently you have people from far left, far right, far everything in media who will stand up for what they believe in, but actually their facts aren't right. Yeah. And so it's having the knowledge that what you're standing up for is actually factually accurate. And that takes proper reading and being able to read both sides. And I think that's the problem with social media, because the algorithms push more and more towards right. They're leaning, right leaning, over it is right. Well, here's all of this left leaning, right leaning media to reinforce what you know.
Yeah.
It isn't easy at all.
No, but setting up things like the round tables are a big help because then you've got people there and you're actually talking to them and you're all getting together and discussing, which I think is more of what we need in this country. I mean, this podcast goes out across the world, but in the UK, I can't speak for other countries, but in the UK, we definitely, like we've said, need more people to get together. And Yeah, and building confidence, you need the confidence, like you say, to stand up for what you believe in. And if you've got one subject, one thing that you strongly believe in, and like you say, you research that and you know your facts, you are going to be in a much better place. And also, if you come across as an authority in that subject, like Mick Lynch does, as we've mentioned, people will follow you because I think, well, he knows what he's talking about. I believe him. I'm going to follow him.
When I first started the roundtables, I was just kind of trying to go, right, what do people want to talk about? It was in lockdown. And the idea was that let's try and just get some kind of networking going because no one was hiring, no one was recruiting. What can we do to keep talking to our clients? And so, you know, we were doing it on working remotely and mental health and this kind of stuff. But the problem was that I was bringing people together. We'd have 10, 12 of us roundtable, which was great. But no one had an answer. No one knew what the answer was because it was all so new. But it gave people a platform to share ideas and stuff, which is brilliant. And then over kind of the end of 2021 and all through 2022, nearly every single episode had a guest speaker. And so I always reach out to people and say, look, you obviously specialize in X, Y, Z. Can you come on, lead a discussion? And they'll normally do 5-10 minutes at the beginning of a bit of a presentation of who they are, why they're a specialist, and what the discussion point is going to be today. And then we have about 40, 45 minutes of an open discussion around whatever the theme is. But I'm not just going to any old person. For example, like I said, I did one on anti-racism in the boardroom. So I had Lara Oyedele on. Now she's the president of the Chartered Institute of Housing. And I know she knows what she's on about. We've had people like Joe Leckie from Big Picture Training. Now she's really interesting because she's worked in customer service in housing for years and run teams in multifacets across social housing. But she now works between the UK and Australia and sees a lot of parallels and also a lot of differences. Mm. So you can bring a different insight to it and say, well, actually, these are some things to consider because some people are trying it this way, that way. So we've had people from Australia coming onto the roundtables. And it is really, really interesting because there's culturally housing. I think any time you talk about something which is about supporting the most vulnerable in society, instantly people get this almost parental style mindset of, oh, we have to look after people.
Mm.
And actually, the cost of, again, we talk about, you know, England and the UK, the cost of renting is so high here at the moment. Housing is so high. If you go back to when social housing first came through, everybody wanted to live in social housing because it was good quality and it was affordable.
Yeah.
I'd love to live in social housing. I rent this property. I'd love to get a decent social housing property. It would be fantastic. But unfortunately, with the way that things changed, and I'm sure you remember that terminology change to kind of council housing and things like that through the years. And if it's council housing, you get gangs and you get drugs and you get violence. And
council estates. Yeah, there must be. I was brought up on a council estate.
I was brought up in Maricourt. You know, it's a similar thing, but for the military. And people think, oh, they're rough or they're this or they're that. No, they aren't. They're just people, and they don't always need looking after. They just want to make sure that if something goes wrong with the house, someone fixes it. And if there is things with antisocial behavior in the region, as there are across the country and every kind of street and whatever else, that it gets dealt with, and that the house is a decent quality, and if there is damp and mold, that they're getting proper support, and if they have mental health needs that are being funded for by the council, that mental health support is actually being provided, and all these kind of things.
Mm.
But unfortunately, there's still this kind of stigma that heavily goes with council estates, all this kind of stuff that is completely unjustified.
Mm.
It's come to read some stats, more than 80% of adults or people of working age who live in social housing are working.
Yeah, decent working people.
They're benefit scroungers. So no, they're not. They're working. They just haven't got enough money because the roles don't pay enough anymore. Minimum wage is low enough. It doesn't match up with the cost of living or the cost of renting.
No.
So there's lots of things going on and people are really trying to kind of fight that stigma and trying to bring some of their brilliant people who live in their properties on board and going, right, well, where can you have value? But some don't obviously want to work for their providers. Some do. And there's lots and lots going on there. And it is a very complicated sector. It can also be a very traumatic sector. You know, I'll speak to people who I've seen some awful things, but just think that it's part of the day-to-day job. Thinking, no, you need more support here. Because actually, in any other sector, and this is where I go back to that professionalism side, in any other sector, you would get the mental health support maybe that you need, and some businesses provide it and some don't. So, I mean, I love it. I I knew nothing about it when I first started recruiting for it. I still remember first day of going into this agency and saying, we're going to put you on our social housing team. And I immediately went, how do you recruit for a tower block? But that's what I knew about social housing, was I knew tower blocks or I knew council estates. And then you realize just how massive a sector it is, just how much influence and how many people they home and house and help. And then you start to dial in further and go, well, some businesses actually don't help. They're just trying to make money.
Yeah.
And how does the whole thing kind of come together? But setting up on my own was, I still speak to friends and they're like, you know, kudos for doing it. And everyone's going, oh, how's the business? How's the business? And it's a real strange one because it's only been 2 years, or well, nearly 2 years complete. And it's, I love the freedom, you know, even doing something like this.
Yeah.
Done if I'd worked for an agency. Not because we wouldn't have built rapport, I couldn't talk about what I was doing, but because someone had gone, oh yeah, go and take an hour off or whatever it'll be to go and record a podcast. That's not
what's
the return on that.
Well, how's that going to make us any money?
Actually, but you never know who you're going to speak to or who you're going to go or where that brand is going to reach out to by doing it. And I love the opportunities it's provided, but I'd also be lying to say it's easier than working just for an agency itself because, you know, at times you go in, okay, so is there any money coming in this month? No, what are we going to do? And it's a blend between the two. But you keep going. And I'm very lucky that I've got a partner that's supported it since day one. Bless her. We met on New Year's Eve 2020 in the middle of lockdown. She moved down from Scotland. We met for the first time. And then 2 weeks of meeting, I'm saying, by the way, I'm leaving my job.
Now I've got your income coming in.
She had her flat, I had mine. She'd only lived in England for 2 days. We'd met online and we just decided to start dating. And then obviously had to bubble because that was the thing back then. Yeah. And yeah, I was like, by the way, I'm leaving my job and set up on my own.
Can you pay my bills for me, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Luckily, there was none of that ever needed. But there was definitely a thing of going, look, I'm backing myself here and we'll see how we go. And from day dot, she's like, if you think you can do it, go for it. Mm. And there was never anything, but half the time she's had more confidence in it than I've had. But that gives you confidence. And when we talk about confidence, you need someone backing you. You know, it's very, very difficult to be.
She believes in you. So even when you don't believe in yourself, she believes in you.
And that's the other joy of District 4, because you've got a community of guys there who, when things are hard, you can reach out to. And the guys and girls and my coach and all the rest of it just go, look, we've all been there. We've done it. You're going to have these moments. That's okay. Download, you know, we had a meeting. We meet up about once a quarter in person. We catch up every couple of weeks on Zoom. And then we meet up every quarter. And they come up to Birmingham for like the second time they've been up to Birmingham. I've been down to London. They're mainly all London based, but they came up to Birmingham. And one of the guys there had just had one of those kind of fortnights of just, cool, that'll happen, this is great. And then everything kind of fell through at the last minute. And anyone who's ever tried to hire will know exactly what I mean. They think they've got their person, the offer's gone out, suddenly something's gone awry, it's all fallen through.
Yeah.
Nightmare for the business. But when that recruiter's gone, I'm now not getting paid or whatever it'll be, going, right, I've just had X amount of £1,000. You know, I've had my money for the rest of the year, just all collapsed. What am I going to do? And so the strategy day and everything else we had planned kind of took a sidestep. I went, right, cool. Let's just have a fun day. Let's have a fun day together and let's just give you a bit of a boost. Let's have a little bit of a chat around kind of what your next plans are and what the steps are and things like that. Let's reinforce that we've been there, we've done it. It's rubbish, but you're going to be okay. And then come Monday, he was in a much better mood than if we'd sat there on that day and gone, right, well, let's talk about the strategy. Because he wasn't going to concentrate on that.
No.
Because nobody could have done. And you need that chance to let go. And that's what District 4 has given, is it's given a place for, if I'm having one of those days, weeks, months, whatever it will be, a place to reach out to this awesome community and say, this sucks right now. And it's brilliant because everybody needs that. And you do miss that when you're working on your own most days, because you've got to find a way to walk into your office and self-motivate and have the confidence to go, I have to do this. But also having that self-motivation, as you'll know yourself, is sometimes the biggest challenge of all, to go, yeah, I'm going to work today, even when you don't want to.
Yeah. And as soon as you get into it, you're all right again, aren't you? You start thinking, I'm doing a good job here. So if anybody's listening, they think this sounds so interesting, I want to know more, how could they contact you?
LinkedIn is brilliant. Matthew Baird on there. If not, it's matt.baird@district4.io, because that's where we set up the server. Go to District 4, it's District and then the number 4, and you can find me on there and you can contact me through that way. Yeah, the Social Housing Roundtable has its own LinkedIn page, so you can find that. You can join the group, and if you want to join any of the weekly discussions, all of the information goes up on there, or on the mailing list. You can sign up to the mailing list on the page as well. LinkedIn has been the biggest platform for me, and it's been superb. But yeah, it's either the District 4 website or email on my LinkedIn is great, whichever way works for whoever needs to. I think All three have got my phone number on it, so you can find me.
I will. Yeah, I'll put all that in the show notes so people know how to contact you.
Thank you.
So anything else you want to say before we finish off?
A big thank you to you. The music that night was great, and there was really good recommendation on the fish and chips for the Golden Retriever experience I'd taken my partner in. Yeah, we just happened to stumble across that pub, and what a great way it was.
Well, I'll give the pub a shout out. It's Pebbles in Watchet. It's an amazing place for music. And the singer-songwriter that night was Steve Pledger, so another person to have a look at.
Well, that was interesting, because I spoke about Steve Pledger, and I didn't know him, but I mentioned Catherine Pretty, who's a friend of mine on my group. Yes. I was like, oh, yeah, we know her. She's great. I was like, all right, I just know her as my mate who does it.
Yeah.
But yeah, brilliant side of him there. And again, they're a business that really know their brand. And I think that would be the thing I'd probably end on, would be that if you're not feeling confident or you want to build your confidence in something, take some time to really kind of work out what it is you're not confident about, because the information's out there, and go and speak to a coach. I can't recommend a coach enough. Speak to a coach, find a community of likewise people who can help, or read and read and read and read, because if you feel like you're struggling with something, the chances are is that you're missing a piece somewhere, and there'll be someone who can help you. Or, you know, the reason I built that credibility through the roundtable wasn't because I was good at bringing people together, though that helped. It's because when I talked about social housing, people knew I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
I wasn't just going, oh, yeah, so how's the building going? Or how's your antisocial behaviour? It was, oh, so how are the nuances? How are these things affecting you? And, you know, it's like confidence breeds confidence. And that's sometimes the most difficult thing. You know, you need someone else to be confident in you, but there will be someone out there who's shouting, who will shout for you. Just do some outreach. And I guess finally, make sure you go to your local pub, because you never know what opportunity
you're going to. You never know who you're going to meet. But everything happens for a reason. People cross your path for a definite reason. So
they will. And it was a lovely evening in a great pub. And due to a strange skiing prank played on me many years ago, Balls became a nickname for a little bit. And so when I saw the pub, I thought we had to go in, and then here we are. So yeah, it was a good fun evening.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, with that then. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been really, really interesting talking to you. And I think listeners will get a lot out of that. There's a lot in there that they probably didn't realize. The fact that, you know, even the fact that social housing has a recruitment side, because people just don't think of that.
Like, from if you have a social purpose, but you don't want to work in the NHS or education, go and look at your local social housing provider. Just type in local housing associations or local councils or whatever it will be. They'll all have recruitment pages. There are far more of them than you think they are. And there are so many jobs available and so many people crying out for people of all kind of levels. But go into it if social purpose is something that matters to you and it's something that you really care about, because that's what it needs. It needs people who are going to properly care about the work they're doing. And I'd love to see it grow and grow and get more recognition. So hopefully we can do it a bit through the roundtables and through other means like this as well.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's absolutely brilliant. And it's lovely talking to you. Thank you.
Cheers.
Hello, everyone, again. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please subscribe, and that will make sure that you don't miss any future episodes. And so from me, Sue Reed, goodbye until next time. Thank you.